Hooligan make a strong return on the Chilkoot and Chilkat rivers, and the warm water blob may be sending salmon forecasts awry. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Emily Files. Those stories up next. The Hooligan are back. After last year's disappointing runs in the Chilkoot and Chilkat rivers, Haines and Klukwan subsistence fishermen are excited that this year's return has been abundant. Area biologists don't know why the runs fluctuate so much, but they're trying to bolster research to understand the traditionally important fish a little better. To find out whether the Hooligan are running, all you have to do is listen. The Hooligan don't make any noise, but the thousands of gulls and other birds feeding on them do.
The seagulls are having a good time.
Oh, it's a party.
Sonny Williams trekked out to Jones Point Tuesday morning to pick up a bucket left behind by a friend.
Does anybody know if they saw a bucket down there with a net in it?
Williams says he's already caught his fill of fish from the Chilkoot River. But as we walk along the bank and he sees the black streaks in the water that show where the Hooligan are, he just can't help himself. He goes to his truck to get a throw net and brings it back next to another fisherman, Vince Hotch.
You ready, Vince?
The net splashes into the water and he starts reeling it in. He dumps a net full of little silver wiggling fish into his bucket, and he can't stop laughing.
You said you weren't going to get any more, but it's just too tempting, huh?
Williams doesn't just catch, smoke, and make oil with the fish. He also keeps data on them. When the run starts, how long it lasts in the Chilkoot and Chilkat. He started doing that because no one else was.
Which is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
To see a giant run like this, you know, because that means 4 years from now probably, or, you know, there'll be another big run. I really can't say that because I don't know, because there's no study being, nobody studies it. Fish and Game doesn't study it. Nobody studied it. So I decided to keep track of it.
Yeah, they're such interesting fish, and they always keep you on your toes.
Meredith Pokart is with the Tokchinik Watershed Council. It's the only group that's formally studied the local Hooligan run, and they only have about 6 years of data for the Chilkoot River and none for the Chilkat.
It's better than nothing, but it's not that long of a data set, and it's only one river.
Pokart says the purpose of their catch-and-release study on the Chilkoot is to get baseline data.
Hooligan are a little different than salmon because Hooligan are not necessarily tied to one specific river. They don't go back to that same natal stream to spawn necessarily. They're more opportunistic and they kind of will take a river within a region. And so the same population that spawns in the Chilkat and the Chilkoot also could spawn in the Ferbee or the Taya or Skagway.
That seems to be what happened last year. The Hooligan run was super low on the Chilkoot, only about 300,000 according to Pokart. This year, it's up around 1.8 million. But in the Taya River up by Skagway last year, people said it was the biggest run they had ever seen. The theory is that some unknown environmental trigger caused the Hooligan to go towards the Taya instead of the Chilkoot. Now, Skagway is going to start getting some numbers on the Hooligan run in the Taya.
We're basically trying to get some baseline information about Hooligan or Hooligan, whichever you like to call them.
Jamie Belt is a biologist with the National Park Service in Skagway. NPS is starting a Hooligan study there.
You know, the arrival of the Hooligan breaks the fast for a lot of the birds and sea mammals that are getting ready for their breeding season or just completed their breeding season. We've had all kinds of activity from river otters and other creatures getting into the game. So it's just a really good indicator species for us of how things are functioning in that ecosystem, so it's a really useful species to focus on.
Skagway fishermen say this year's Hooligan run seemed strong but brief. Soon, the Park Service will have numbers to compare to the anecdotes. Back at the Chilkat, Williams takes out some of the Hooligan he caught a few days ago and smoked.
I usually try to have one a day.
Mm-hmm. Just one little?
One's good enough.
Yeah.
You know, it's like apple a day, you know, one a day. Mm-hmm. I just had to eat one hooligan a day.
He hopes next spring the mysterious little fish will swim back to the Chilcat and Chilcoot so he can stock up for another year. Fisheries researchers say the appearance of a warm water anomaly in the Northeast Pacific Ocean likely added a new wrinkle into recent predictions of Alaska salmon runs. But because of the variability of West Coast salmon populations, a simple cause and effect may be impossible to pin down. Biologists' forecasts of salmon runs are considered crucial by the commercial fishing industry in planning for the new season. KTOO's Matt Miller has more on the story.
Biologists are still not sure exactly how the warm water blob is affecting salmon up and down the West Coast.
You know, a thing we need to kind of think about is warm water in Alaska is really different than warm water in California.
That's Brian Beckman, a research fishery biologist at the Northwest Fishery Science Center in Seattle.
Warm water in California can be so warm that it's actually injuring the fish, whereas warm water in Alaska, it just means it's abnormally different, and maybe the ecosystem is different, but it's still a comfortable place for fish to be.
Beckman was one of the organizers of the Salmon Ocean Ecology Meeting in Juneau in March, which featured biologists and researchers from California to Alaska. Because of differences in the life cycles and migration patterns of the five Pacific Ocean salmon species, Beckman says it's impossible to immediately determine how the blob is affecting salmon abundance, run timing, growth, forage habits, and complicated predator-prey relationships.
It's really hard to talk about salmon runs all across the coast in any one single focus because they all do kind of different things. So yeah, the blob does not have one specific effect across all salmon stocks.
So why would any of that information be important? The $414 million answer to that question comes from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. That's the dock price paid for all salmon harvested last year. In addition, the McDowell Group of Juneau says Alaska salmon fisheries generate $840 million in income for well over 18,000 direct jobs. Joe Orsi, fisheries research biologist at the Ted Stevens Marine Research Institute in Akabe, explains why they bother with researching salmon biology and do modeling or run simulations to predict Alaska salmon abundance, run timing, and even size of the fish.
Basically, you confront the stakeholder and say, this is what we think is going to happen, and you interact with the industry people, and these are when the decisions are made.
They include decisions by state fisheries managers who plan the timing and length of the openings, the processors which dispatch tenders and hire outside help to work in the plants, and the fisherman who must budget his or her expenses and figure out how many deckhands to hire. Orsi says they're not sure if it was the blob's presence in the Northeast Pacific that threw a monkey wrench into their modeling for last year's salmon runs. Overall, last year's pink harvest in southeast Alaska fell well short of predictions, with runs in the southern part of the panhandle failing badly. Another big question is whether El Nino or equatorial warming has encouraged other species to wander north.
And of course, we have unknown ecological impacts of the subtropical fish species that were occurring in the Gulf of Alaska, the tuna, sunfish, pleasure sharks. And we don't know if this is going to be increased competition or predation as a result of those.
In order to get a better handle on what is happening, researchers have created a coastwide database that will visually show how the blob is affecting various salmon runs. Brian Burke, a research fishery biologist at the Northwest Fishery Science Center in Seattle, helped design it.
This could be a good way to summarize when and where did the blob impact salmon. The fact is, we don't know yet because a lot of the salmon that were in the blob have not returned yet.
And some of those fish that have not returned yet are mature Copper River reds. It's traditionally the very first commercial salmon fishery of the year. They could start arriving sometime in mid-May. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Matt Miller.
For KHNS News, I'm Emily Files. Thanks for joining us this evening. You can listen to and read local news stories on our website at khns.org.